Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
This is episode 11, There Will Be New Blood.
Welcome to Color Country Politics. I am Jenny Hendricks, here with my co-host, Jesse Harris.
Hello.
And we are thrilled today to have our incoming county attorney, Chad Dodson, with us. Thank you so much for making time. And this has been tricky to schedule. Thanks for being here.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you. I'm a fan of the podcast.
Yay! That's awesome. Thank you so much. Just a little shout out.
Yeah.
That's the first time we've had someone who's heard us pop up on here.
No, absolutely.
We must be starting to take hold.
That's good.
That's good stuff. So thanks for being on. What you we kind of wanted to get from you today is just sort of an overview of, you know, sort of what are your goals for your office, your incoming kind of taking over?
Yeah.
What are some issues that you're dealing with? Just kind of tell us what's happening in your world.
Yeah. So maybe just an overview, too, of what kind of the county attorney does. And some people don't necessarily know.
Yeah.
There's two primary functions of the county attorney. One is as the public prosecutor. So we handle all the criminal offenses that take place in the county. So we make sure that we're holding people accountable and ensuring justice.
So for all of the cities and the county at large, you guys handle everything.
Yeah, but for Class B misdemeanors and below in the city of Cedar City and Parowan, they have their own prosecutor that handles the misdemeanors. Everything else, Class A misdemeanor and above, and anything that happens in the county, we're responsible for.
Okay.
So we take care of all of that. And then the other function of the county attorney is to be legal counsel for the county commission and other county officials. So we give legal advice and try to make sure we're on good legal footing when we move forward.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
I apologize for my voice. I've kind of been losing it lately.
We caught you right as you were getting a cold, I guess. Right?
Yes.
So effectively, you're interchangeable with the term district attorney.
Yeah. So district attorneys, there's two different versions of it. In Salt Lake, they have a district attorney, just the way that they've broken it up. In a lot of these rural counties, it's a county attorney, but very similar duties, almost identical responsibilities as a district attorney.
Fantastic. So as the incoming county attorney, what do you hope to accomplish? What does your world look like for the next year or so?
So I think one of the big things that I want to do is make it a part of my schedule is to do community outreach, to reach out to different stakeholders in the community, whether it be with other law enforcement agencies, school district officials, other stakeholders who we work with routinely. I think that it's important to keep those open lines of communication.
Sure.
So that we can continue to work together to have a better product that we produce. And I think that that's something that I would like to focus on and make sure that we are kind of all on the same sheet of music.
That's great. Going forward. What information, what kind of interaction do you have? Why is that important to have a good relationship with those community stakeholders?
I think it's vital. I don't think that we can really do our job effectively if we don't. So, working with the county sheriff, for instance, he's going to have things that he's seen that he's going to bring to my attention that we can work together to solve. Other community stakeholders, whether it be county commission, whether it be just leaders in the community who are seeing issues that need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. I think that that's it's vital that we have an ear to the ground because sometimes we don't always see it. We're very reactive. We get things that come to our office by way of citation or investigations that are sent to us by law enforcement. And so if we're not aware of things going on in the community, it's hard for us to address it.
Yeah.
And so it's very helpful, I think, when we can have that dialogue and know what's going on.
That's great. Speaking of, you know, kind of issues that are in our community, as the incoming chief of your department, what issues are you seeing? What are you dealing with?
So the ongoing issue always seems to be that the drug issue that's in the county. That never seems to cease. And in fact, we've almost seen some spikes in the last few years. We have partnered with a law firm. The county commission has retained a law firm called Durham Jones and Penninger. They are pursuing litigation in conjunction with the county attorney's office, opopioid litigation that I know that people have seen in the news here locally. Utah is, I think, has the seventh highest rate of death in the United States of opioid deaths. And in 2016 alone, just the nationwide statistic, there were 42,000 opioid deaths in America. Yeah. And I think to put a little contrast in that, from 1955 to 1975, the U.S. involvement in Vietnam, there were 47,000 combat deaths over that entire period. And so we were having that in 1 year
in the United States. To put it in.
So I think that that's a huge problem, the opioid issue in the county. So we're trying to tackle that on multiple fronts. One is that litigation on the civil side, and then continuing.
Who is that litigation against?
So it's big pharmaceutical companies. There's multiple defendants named. Several are big pharmaceutical companies. There's some doctors who were involved in pushing these pharmaceuticals on the community. The main allegation is that you know these pharmaceutical companies promised in the mid-90s that there were not going to be adverse effects, that there were the addictive possibilities were low, and of course, that just hasn't been the case.
The opposite is almost true.
Yeah, exact opposite.
So, in your prosecutions in your office, do you see more sort of the prescription side as being an issue, or is it more of the illegal sort of underground type opiates that are an issue?
I think the illegal opiates, so your heroin, we do see oxycodone and pills that come through. A lot of times they're not coming from docs. I don't think locally. They're coming from across the border. People are getting them from China and other places. But a lot of times the stuff that's killing people here are too often it's heroin. And I think sometimes you see these young people that are have this addiction because they had a prescription early on for some medical issue, and then it's just gotten worse. Now you have addicts who are using heroin.
That's incredible.
And fentanyl is something that we've seen a few times here in our community. We had a big operation where the narcotics task force was intercepted some cell phones, and we could glean a lot of information of what was going on.
Okay.
And in that, there was fentanyl was in our community, and that was something that people were actively seeking. They wanted heroin laced with fentanyl. And,
wow, that stuff will kill you.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's deadly. So
wow,
it's scary.
That's incredible. So that seems like something that's taking up a lot of your time. What else do you do besides just sort of the drug stuff, which is obviously a huge thing in our community?
We have had a kind of a spike in some violent crimes as of late. We've had a lot of aggravated assaults that we've prosecuted in the office. We have two, unfortunately, these are the worst things that come through the office, are child homicides. So one that happened this last summer. We have an open case of a two-year-old child who was beaten to death. And then we had a shaken baby that was from the year prior to that. And those are still open cases. We expect those to probably go to trial. And in fact, I mean, Sergeant David Evans from the Cedar City Police Department went and sat through a child fatality review board in Salt Lake yesterday, where the medical examiner and other experts in the field kind of talk about the case. And so that was very helpful. But you never want to see one of those cases come through the door. And unfortunately, two open right now.
Oh, man. That's too bad.
So what are you seeing as the trend lines as far as crimes coming to your office?
I don't know if there's some trends that we've seen recently, but I think drugs are always a staple. And like I was saying, I think since 2015, the drug prosecutions have gone up in the county by a large margin. And I don't know if there's a correlation between the enactment of the Justice Reinvestment Initiative. I'm sure that has something to do with it. The reduction of, you know, the sentencing on felony offenses and drug offenses.
We've talked about JRI a couple of times on this podcast, but kind of take us through what that looks like from your perspective and how that's affecting Iron County.
So before JRI, any possession of a Schedule 1 or 2, so methamphetamine, heroin, things like that, was a third-degree felony. JRI reduced that to a Class A misdemeanor, unless you have multiple prior convictions. Also, the effect of JRI was to reduce the sentencing, which is very good, you know, makes a lot of sense, things behind it, that we don't want to incarcerate low-level nonviolent drug addicts. But I think that the effect has had is that we are seeing multiple repeat offenders who were just coming through the door all the time.
Yeah.
We're getting very low jail time, and then we're just seeing them constantly come through the door again. So that's been the effect of JRI, I think, is that we haven't been seeing. And also part of that, the reinvestment portion was we were supposed to get a lot of money for treatment, things like that. And that's been slow to come. And so the penalty phase came on the front end, but we didn't see the treatment side come until we still really haven't seen that in its full promise.
And so we've kind of talked about it in terms of, a carrot and a stick. And from what I have understood, the burden of the prosecution and the rehabilitation has kind of been pushed down onto the counties, which I think is, I think things are best handled at the lowest level possible.
Yeah.
But if the county is being charged with the responsibility of doing it, but there's no funding, and then the laws have changed so that it is harder to keep people in prison, that stick has kind of been taken away. Is that
absolutely a good understanding? And so I think people who traditionally probably would have been sent to prison are now doing longer jail stints in the county jail, which is counties are having to fund that because we're housing them, feeding them, where traditionally they'd be in the state prison system. So I think that's another burden the counties are facing.
So those costs have been pushed back onto the counties.
Right. And so that's another thing that I think was an unforeseen consequence. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these rural counties are, getting the brunt of the costs associated with that.
It kind of sounds like what happened with Operation Rio Grande, the focus on enforcement issues first, and then the treatment has been slow to come after.
Right.
Because it costs a lot of money.
And so I'm optimistic that we can get the treatment side. I've seen some great strides in treatment.
Good.
As the drug court prosecutor. So I know that works. We can see a lot of gains that way. But at the same time, you do need that stick. Mm-hmm. So if there's no fear of any consequences, then why get treatment?
Right.
It seems like treatment's the smart thing economically anyway, because you're going to reduce the amount of time you have to keep people in jail, which is very expensive.
Yes.
You're reducing crime, which crime comes with its own cost. You're helping people get, on their feet. So they're contributing more to the economy and society. It just seems like kind of an easy sell, you'd think.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of good, a lot of common sense. In fact, I think Congress has just passed something similar on the federal end, First Step Act, I believe it's called. Same idea, low-level, low-risk drug addicts. We don't need to be incarcerating them for long periods of time. Focus on violent offenders. And so hopefully we can get a good balance and get that working.
So are you seeing success then going through drug court? I've talked to a few people who have talked about, the people who have come out of that and really been able to turn their lives around, and it has been a success. It's just sort of getting people there. Is that the issue?
So we have limited resources so we have to kind of screen people into the drug court. We can't allow everybody in who probably could benefit from it. So we have a screening process, but so a lot of the people who come through are very successful. And, I've seen people who come in, they're homeless, they've had their children taken away, no job prospects, they come through the drug court, the treatment team helps them on the addiction part, you have people that help with the employment part, and at the end of the day, they're employed, they're reconciling with their family and moving forward, and it's one of the neater things to see as a prosecutor.
That's a positive
sort
of aspect of what you do. Do you have statistics on how many people are going through that and how many are successful at the end of that?
I don't have anything that I can spit out right now, but I can definitely bring that back. I don't know what our success rate is, because you have people that graduate and they're successful for a time.
Yeah.
And then unfortunately you see them back on the booking page, maybe even a year down the road. So it's always a constant battle. Addiction is just,
it's a tough thing. And it's something that I think our community needs to really be aware of, because it affects everybody.
Yes,
it does. Everybody knows somebody or is related to somebody or has had some experience. I mean, that's really how prevalent it is in our community. It's not in the shadows. It's people that we know.
And I think especially now with the opioid issue, it's affecting people who are not kind of in that same normal demographic than using meth or cooking meth. Mm-hmm. These are people who are, dads and moms who got a prescription and now they're hooked. And
scary stuff.
It is.
Scary stuff. Well, what else would you like our community to know about you, about your office, about what your plans and your goals are?
So not going to reinvent the wheel. Don't plan to do that necessarily. There are some things that I'd like to do to streamline things in the office, is trying to, you know, make things work smoother. One of the things that I want to do as quick as possible is to try to go paperless. People that see us when we're going to court, we have these big carts that we're lugging around with stacks of files. And so, yeah, we get up, we have these stacks on the desk in the courtroom, and a lot of places are paperless. And I think that, that we can implement that.
That's
we got
a great
some,
goal. That's fabulous.
We got some younger tech guys in the office. Right. So that's one of the things that we'd like to do fairly quickly.
That's exciting.
Eliminate the luggage to court.
I've actually seen some cool things startups are doing in the legal community of their basically doing automated lawyers, essentially. If you have a common type of case, they'll use software to generate the necessary documents and file them for you, which is really cool stuff to see. It's like, wow, you know, this... How many lawyers are you going to put out of a job? How many accountants are going to be put out of a job?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's great because it allows your office to do more with the same resources.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think we could do a better job as an office of kind of showing the good work that's done. We have some fantastic staff members. We have five legal assistants. We have a victims advocate who is just fantastic in the work that she does with people who come in at the worst part of their life. Our attorneys, we work really close with law enforcement to try and get good outcomes. And I think that we could do a better job of showing the community what's being done.
I think that would be great. And you're welcome back here anytime.
Hey, thanks. Absolutely.
All right. Anything else that we need to know about your office?
Not off the top of my head. I really appreciate the chance to be on here. Sorry for my voice. And
we'll have you back maybe in the summer when there's less moving this cold stuff around. It's been kind of crazy the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on. We really, really are grateful for the information and for your time.
Yeah.
And
thank you, guys.
We'll see you again soon. This has been Color Country Politics, and we'll see you soon.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.